What's up, people? It's that time again. WGN, let's join the two friends. Jason Whiteside and Rich Lankoff in a legal face-off. Hear the knowledge they got. Legal point and counterpoint, Jay, you know the drill. From sports to Hollywood and the politics world. Don't forget the current events that occur. Plus a couple jabs here and there. Yeah.
You're listening Pretty Late, and that is the theme song for Legal Face-Off. You can go to WGNplus.com and hear Rich Lenkov and some other guy. Someday, I swear to God, Rich, I will remember his name, Jason Whiteside, I guess. We're going to have to say it out loud.
He's a myth. He's a figment of our imagination. He's just there to make us sound good.
I bet you do both voices. There isn't even a Jason Whiteside. You use like a high-pitched voice, don't you? What was that, Todd?
I do. Sometimes it's like a British Jason Whiteside.
It's like the Fight Club version of Law.
I love that. The Fight Club version of Law. The first rule is there is no Jason Whiteside. Rich, you're traveling right now, and so we're grateful for your time. But I saw the news break today that President Obama put forward his nomination for the Supreme Court of the United States. And what were your thoughts on Garland?
Yeah, Merrick Garland, he has been on the short list on the last couple of Supreme Court openings, so not a huge surprise. He was one of the three finalists that was leaked in the last month or so. So we knew that he was in the mix. I was a little surprised that he got the pick just because he is older. He'll be about 10 years older than any nominee in the last 50 years.
What?
Traditionally. Yeah, you know, usually
he's the second oldest nominee ever.
Ever. Really? Second. Wait, hold on a second. By the way, Rich Lenkov, we have in studio with us Todd Belcour, who is an adjunct professor at Northwestern Law.
Hey, counsel.
And the reason we're having this conversation is I saw him post something about his disappointment with this nomination. He just said that this is the second oldest Supreme Court nomination ever. And that seems – what are your thoughts? Do you think that this was a choice because he's a moderate, because he was on the short list, and when he was up for nomination in the D.C. Circuit Court, it was 97-0. So did this seem like a sure deal? And it's kind of a like, here, Republicans, approve of him or be jerks.
How can you argue with this, right?
Right.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, clearly Obama did this strategically – understanding that McConnell and the rest of the Senate Republicans have said they won't even consider any nominee. You know, Obama clearly is trying to say that this is someone who otherwise would obviously be passed through the Senate, would be affirmed pretty regularly. He's moderate. You know, Orrin Hatch, who is one of the more senior members of the Judiciary Committee, has come out repeatedly and endorsed him. So, yeah, if the Republicans won't confirm Merrick Garland, who would they confirm? So that's the idea behind his nomination. But, you would want someone who's younger, who could stay on the court a little longer, maybe someone who's a little more diverse also.
Yeah, that's come up today. Someone told me they were really hoping it would be someone of Asian background. An opportunity was missed there, which may not. By the way, and I don't know how to explain that to our audience. Like, why would that be important, Rich? Why would that be something we should take into consideration?
You know, with all the social issues, abortion, crime, death penalty, all the issues that the Supreme Court touches, you obviously want the court to be made up of people who are, you know, as diverse as possible. Traditionally, you've got people on the Supreme Court who are very, male, very white, very East Coast. Traditionally, they have come from a handful of law schools, you know, Ivy League law schools. So a lot of the people who made the short list were more diverse, were younger. There was, you know, a couple of African-Americans. There were some females. There was an Indian American, Sri Srivastava, who everyone thought was going to be on the, you know, maybe going to be the nominee. So it's important, I think, just like any other body, for the Supreme Court to look like the people that it represents.
Well, that's often the goal, isn't it, in a court case, that you want to have a jury of your peers. Why would you not want to have a Supreme Court justice of your peers? I'm just curious.
I think that's precisely what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would think that justice is blind, right? And that the justices, it wouldn't matter what their makeup is, that they would rule simply based on the law and the evidence. But, you know, you certainly want people on the Supreme Court, the highest court of the land, to look like America and to be diverse. You don't want it to be simply the bastion of, you know, old white men.
Or just and also now older white women.
Right.
I love Notorious RBG, but I'm just saying.
So what do you think of this decision? Do you think it was too much of a political risk, Counselor?
Well, it's really interesting because if the Republicans do block him and Hillary Clinton wins, then the Republicans will wish that they had Merrick Garland on the court because, you know, who knows who a Democratic president could nominate. She could nominate someone who is far more liberal than Merrick Garland, who is widely considered to be pretty, you know, pretty moderate, pretty centrist. So if Hillary Clinton wins the presidency, then the Republicans could rue the day that they blocked Garland. I think, you know, all things being equal, he seems like, you know, a great judge. We don't know too much about him. That's what hopefully the hearings will reveal. But I think all things being equal, the president made a very calculated political move.
Or is it is he a placeholder, right? So to say he made a nomination, he's done his job, knowing that Republicans will not have, they won't hold hearings, they won't listen. So is he just putting someone out there to say, well, I've done my part, now they're not doing theirs, and then, you know, move forward and play the political party games?
I think they would say that no matter what, though, right? So no matter who he would put up as a nominee, they would still say, he would still say, I've done my part, and they may say no. I think the biggest risk with this actual nominee is that they say yes.
Oh.
And then they take him, and then we miss a valuable, well, the Democratic Party misses a valuable opportunity to have a diverse candidate on there for the next 30 years.
But in comparison with Scalia, isn't it still less conservative than it was before?
They wouldn't be able to find a candidate who would fulfill that sort of qualification.
Interesting. What are your thoughts, Rich?
Yeah, I mean, it's true that you know, you couldn't find anyone who is to the right of Scalia.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to giggle, only, I mean, yes, because I think that if you're not following what the Supreme Court has done for the last 20 years, it is to giggle at that there could be anybody more conservative or even approach the conservative nature of Justice Scalia. He was a bit tight-fisted with his thoughts on what it meant to be a judge.
Yeah, he clung to the 1800s pretty seriously.
Which is, well, 1700s when the...
I was just going to say 1700s. Yeah.
That's giving too much credit.
But, Rich, is it possible that this is sort of a just sort of red herring to go, here's this one, and then, you know what, then if you don't like that one, well, here's the one we really wanted. Can it be a psychological sort of warfare?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, you would hate to obviously have, you know, this judge in that position as a pawn, and you would hate to have Obama yank the rug out from him in a few months. But, you know, it could be. I mean, what will likely happen is I think the Republicans will delay, you know, as long as they can. They'll drag their feet and they'll wait to see, you know, as they'll wait as close to the election as possible. Ideally, I think they would wait until the election happens and before the new president is sworn in, they would then, you know, hold an up or down vote.
Yeah.
Well, here's what. Here's what no one's mentioned, and you said that if Hillary becomes president, you know, the Republicans might rue the day. We can't even wrap our minds around any nominees that President Trump might put forward.
Oh, okay.
I'm just...
Well, remember, he's not consulting with anyone. He's consulting with his own brain.
Talking to himself, yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah, you don't know if he has a short list or not.
I'm sorry.
We know he has short hands.
We'll all be fine.
No, but and all joking aside, in this situation, though, because now we do have to take like seriously that this might be our president, that he might ascend to that office. We don't even know what that looks like because he doesn't answer the Republican Party. You would think that Mitch McConnell and many of the party leaders would go, maybe we're better off because they seem to want to distance themselves from Donald Trump.
Well, I know Trump in a couple of debates actually mentioned some candidates that he would use as a replacement for Scalia that were considered generally textualist and that the conservative wing of the party would be okay with. But I think the greater concern, and still this is where my boat is, I think it's overthinking by the president in this instance. Because I think what will happen is I think the Republicans will be willing to buckle in this case and, you know, give this gentleman an opportunity to have a hearing confirmation and then say, see, the president caved to our demands. He knew this is someone we were like. We actually got the person we wanted. Congratulations to us. And then what it does is it deflates the folks from the Democratic base who are excited to have an opportunity to have someone that they could really be excited about and build some momentum behind.
Right.
I think you're right. I think that's true. I think, you know, I sort of wish Obama stuck to his guns and said, listen, you know, your argument doesn't hold any weight. It's purely political. And to say that you're not going to consider my nominee simply because, you know, you don't want to is ridiculous. I agree with you. He should have picked who he would have picked anyway, which I think would have been someone younger, someone more diverse. I think he did miss a great opportunity to, you know, leave the court with someone who would be there for, you know, 30 or 35 years. Merrick Garland, you know, even in the best case scenario at 63, you can't expect he'll be on there for, you know, longer than 20 years. So I agree with you. And I think, you know, the polls have shown that people are dismissing the Republicans' argument that this should be an electoral issue versus a constitutional pick.
And that was the argument that Todd made earlier, was that he feels like the president's choice has been sort of dictated by others rather than his own beliefs. He let them set the tone rather than setting the tone himself.
So you're allowing the Senate to both choose the nominee and determine whether or not they're confirmed. It shouldn't be both. And that's kind of what he's doing by succumbing to the demands of the Senate.
At least we didn't have a Justice Bork. My husband mentioned this earlier today. By the way, Craig, James, I'm pretty sure Todd too. Rich Lankoff and I might be the only ones who've been like, oh yeah, it might have been a Justice Bork. Do you remember that at all, Rich?
No.
No?
Bork?
Yeah.
I remember the judge.
Well, I remember,
it sounds like an inside joke that I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, it was here's the thing is there have been some controversies in the last 40 years, obviously, right? There's a movie coming out called Confirmation that will be very interesting about the confirmation of Clarence Thomas. Mm. So the drama that we are sort of in the middle of now is nothing at the level, because that was sort of salacious, right? There were Coke cans with what on it? Rich, you want to say it or should I?
Well, what time is it? Is it past the time where we can...
with bodily hairs on the Coke cans. Those are the kind of hearings that we had
say,
to hear.
You can say the other
pubic
thing,
hair.
Right? Yeah, pubic hair. Just want to make sure.
It was a very strange time. So, I mean, like, that was a bizarre situation. And this is not at that level. But at the same time, you're going, but you should be doing your – everyone should be doing their job. And that includes making sure that we have a fully seated bench on the Supreme Court.
Well, you know, I spoke to someone today who had a perspective that the original framers of the Constitution believed that within the process of advised consent could actually include the procedural hurdles of not even allowing a confirmation hearing, which I disagree with vehemently. But I think the point is that some people do believe that they're standing on constitutional grounds when they say that the Senate is permitted to not have a confirmation hearing for a nominee.
Well,
yeah, I've heard that too, and it's ridiculous. I mean, people are arguing that advised consent means that you can advise not to even consider holding hearing. I mean, that's nuts. And it's interesting how, like, you know, a lot of Republicans are strict constructionists, right, when it's convenient for them.
Right.
But when you're reading the words of the Constitution that say advise consent, then you're, you know, reading more into it than the words say. The words say advise and consent. It doesn't say, you know, you can consider that to mean you're not going to even hold hearing.
I mean, with the reason being, I don't want to. Rich Lenkov,
well,
I want to thank
you.
thank you so much for your time. Can you tell us where you are right now? Because we want to wish you a good time wherever you are.
I can. I'm looking out at the Vegas Strip right now. I'm
nice. What side?
That's very good.
Craig, we have to
Which
do a
hotel?
Road trip.
Which
Let's
hotel?
Go
Tell
with Rich. Sometime. Rich, can we go with you?
Can we go to Vegas?
Let's go to Vegas.
Let's all go to Vegas.
Vegas.
On right now.
On Rich's dime.
Not right now.
Oh.
Yeah, it's pretty late Vegas style, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, like, what epitomizes Pretty Late more than going to Vegas?
I don't think our show is Pretty Late when it's in Vegas. No, if we're in Vegas broadcasting, that's pretty early.
Never shuts out.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Here's what I'll tell you that my manager told me one time. Go play the 100 slots for me. He gave me $100 and I kept 80 because I lost the first 20 and got nervous.
You're not made for Vegas.
I'm not made for Vegas. I'm made for people watching. Are you a people watcher or a gambler, Rich?
I am a little bit of a gambler, but I like to watch the sites as well.
Exactly.
Sure. I just have to say out loud that if we go to Vegas as a group, I probably won't produce any shows because I won't leave the gambling table.
I'll be watching you gamble.
Awesome.
Rich Lankoff, thank you so much. Have a good time. And again, bet 20 on the slots for me. And that's all I got. I can't take it. All right, then. Have fun.
Thank you.
Go to WGNplus.com for a legal face-off with Rich Lankoff and, you know, Jason Whiteside. More after this on 720 WGN.